So we're beginning a new series that's going to take us to Easter, and it's called Seeing Jesus. So what we're going to do for the next 3 weeks is we're going to do our best to allow the Lord to tune our eyes so that we can actually see Him for who He is and see ourselves in light of Him and get a glimpse of what He is doing. So if you want to follow, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 20 this morning, so you can go ahead and turn there and we'll dig into a couple different stories this morning. But I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, but psychologists tell us that if I were to ask this question and get a response from you, that here's the question. If I were to say, how many of you in the room believe that you're an above average driver? Right? Don't raise your hands. I see one. Right? Don't raise them. We don't want to out anybody. Psychologists say that typically in a given room that 75% of the people present will put their hands up. 75%. Now, the appropriate number would be about 50. If we had an accurate self-reflection of our ability as drivers compared to other drivers, right? Because 50% are going to be above average and 50 are going to be below to varying degrees depending on where you rank. But stats say 75% will say they're an above average driver, which is mathematically impossible. What this proves is that we tend to overestimate our strengths and underestimate our weaknesses. It's just something that's natural psychological phenomenon. Now, let's take that idea and let's go back 2,000 years into the first century and let's ask a different question. Not how many of you are above average drivers, but let's ask this question to those who are present in and around Jesus as He's ministering in the ancient Near East. If we ask this question, how many of you have an above average understanding of Jesus? My guess is more than 50% of the hands would go up. Right, because all the Romans would put their hands up and they would say, oh, Jesus, we get Him. He's just another revolutionary. He's going to come. He's going to go. Right? That's who Jesus is. But every Roman's like, yep, I see Him. I understand Him. Right? All their hands go up. If you were to ask every religious leader, the Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes, maybe even the Essenes and the Zealots, like ask them, who's Jesus? Who is He? Or, right, do you think you understand Jesus or see Him more clearly than everybody else? They would all say, yeah, we see Him. Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes would say, yeah, well, we know Jesus. He's simply a rebel rouser. He's just here to stir the pot. But He's a nobody from a nowhere place doing nothing of value. That's what they would say. They think they see Jesus clearly. Now, if we were to go to the 12 disciples and say, hey, 12 disciples, do you think you see Jesus more clearly than everybody else? All 12 disciples would say, yep, we see Him more clearly than everybody else. We're with Him the most. We hear Him the most. We're around Him all the time. Of course we see Jesus more clearly than everybody else. And of the 12 disciples, if you were to go to James and John and say, James and John, of this select group of 12 disciples who we all believe, like they think they see Jesus more clearly, do you, James and John, think you see Jesus more clearly than even the rest of the 12 disciples? They would say, yes, 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 and yes. Of course we see Jesus more clearly. And really, the truth was that Peter, James, and John, they were in like this little inner circle that Jesus had. Jesus had like circles of relationships where He spent more time with people depending on what circle you were in and gave you more access to see things that other people didn't see. James and John were two of the three that saw Jesus transfigure Himself on the mountain. They had special privileges to see things that others didn't. James and John, do you understand Jesus more than everyone else? Yes! James and John, be careful. Just because you are around Jesus more, hear His teachings more, see Him doing more, and have special access to see Him do things other people don't see, that's all true. But do not assume then that you're actually seeing Jesus more clearly than everyone else. Matthew chapter 20, starting in verse 20, let's dig in. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Okay, that would be the mom of James and John. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to Jesus with her sons. There they are, James and John, right next to mom. And kneeling before him, she asked Jesus for something. Jesus said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Say that these two sons of mine, please, Jesus, are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your kingdom." Okay, to bring this up to our common day vernacular and our governmental understanding, what James and John's mom is asking for is that when Jesus comes into power, that James and John would be the vice president and the secretary of state, right? They want the next two most prominent and powerful positions in the kingdom. And it seems to be fitting positions for such ambitious young men. They were referred to as the sons of thunder, right? They're the ones who would grab a hold of something and shake it until it was properly shooken, right? It seems like these are the kind of guys, powerful guys, that you want in powerful positions, right? It seems to make sense. Verse 22, but Jesus answered, "You do not know what you are asking." And it wasn't just as if James and John's mom is asking for this favor. James and John are right there with her. And they're just trying to bring in a little extra motivation to seal the deal. But that question, "Please make us VP, Secretary of State." And then Jesus' response, "You don't know what it is that you are asking for," reveals here, Matthew 20, so far into the ministry of Jesus, it reveals that James and John do not know their place in the story of God. So our mission statement here as a church, as individuals and as a body, we want to find our place in the story of God. We want to see Him. We want to see ourselves. We want to see the world as He wants us to see it. And we want to just nestle into all the places that He wants us to be. We want to do the things that He wants us to do. We want to see Him so clearly that we find our place in all the things that He's about. And James and John are not doing that right now. They're not seeing. For all of their observing and watching and looking at Jesus, they have not gotten to the point where they can see Him yet. In my New Testament class, I still remember Dr. Grant Osborne, one night, shared this truth that just opened my eyes to things, began to open my eyes to things I'd never seen before. He said this, he said, the gospel writers in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he said, of course, when you're reading through the gospel accounts and you come to an individual story, he said, there is so much meaning in that story. And pull out of that story as much meaning as you can pull out, because all scripture is profitable in so many ways. But then he said this, I already knew that. I already knew that the individual stories had a whole bunch of meaning that we could just mine out for centuries. But this is the new thing that he said. He said, but not just the individual stories have meaning. He said the gospel writers arranged the account of Jesus in such a way that the individual stories, as they are related to the stories around them, also begin to communicate superstructures of meaning. Wow, I'd never heard that before. Well, it's absolutely true. And since it is, now I want to look at the very next story after James and John's request to be number two and number three. The very next story that we dig into here is this, Matthew 20, starting in verse 29. Right? Remember the story before is two guys who thought they were seeing Jesus clearly and then therefore seeing their place and what God is doing very clearly. Matthew 20, 29, next story. And as they went out of Jericho, that's Jesus and his disciples, a great crowd followed him. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David." And then verse 32. And stopping, Jesus called to them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Lord, let our eyes be opened." Here we have, in the matter of two different stories in the Gospel of Matthew, two different stories. One is of two blind men who are seeing Jesus clearly enough to ask him for something that is right and good and appropriate. And we have two seeing men that believe they're seeing Jesus more clearly than anybody else, who are asking Jesus for that which is not good, Jesus says. You don't know what you are asking for. Two guys who think that they see Jesus the best, James and John, reveal that they're actually blind. And the two guys who literally couldn't see a thing because they were blind are actually about to receive their sight. So the question now is, where did James and John go wrong? In what specific ways are they blind to Jesus, thinking they can see him, but they can't? Because if we can discern this and understand this, then maybe it will help us to see Jesus rightly, to see our place in what he is doing, and then be able to participate more fluidly and easily in all of the things that he is doing in us and around us and longing to do even through us. And so now to launch into this, anybody ever heard of the name Andy Crouch? Does that name ring a bell? He's a Christian thinker, right? Deep thinker. When you go home today, if you're on the Garden City email list, you're going to receive a podcast that I just listened to 10 days ago. And in that podcast, I chose this podcast to listen to because of the title, and I knew that Andy Crouch was thinking through things that I was thinking through. And in listening to the podcast, I realized sometimes there's people that are like a couple steps further down the road who see things a little more clearly than you. Andy sees some things more clearly than me. And I just want to like say to you, right, through the lens of Matthew 20 and 21, I just want to like lay out for you what Andy Crouch says and like prepare you for the podcast that I hope that you listen to, because it's deep water stuff. And I think that it illuminates what's going on here between like what James and John and their mom want and what Jesus wants and why we're all not seeing things in the right way. Here's what Andy Crouch says. I'm just going to summarize it here a little bit. He says this, that Christians have a fascination with impact. He actually calls it an impact fetish, right? And that means it's not good. And the reason why I listen to this is because I've been having these same thoughts for about a decade now, right? And the thing that I appreciate about Andy is that he actually came up with a mathematical equation of impact. You guys ready? All the math nerds in the house, you're going to love this. Here's what Andy Crouch says impact is. Impact is F over T, or force over time. Meaning the idea behind impact, if you want to have an impact on the world or a person or whatever, here's what you want to do to have an impact. You want to bring maximum force over a minimum amount of time. Because that's the way that you're going to have the greatest impact. Because then you can go, right, and use your time more wisely, go to a different place, and on a short period of time, bring maximum force over minimum time to bring the change that you want to bring and see things happen that you believe need to see happen or want to see happen. F over T, force over time, is the equation for impact. As I think about that in like church world, I'm just going to give an example here that I think is absurd, but it makes sense. Have you ever watched a televangelist on TV before, right? Sometimes the televangelist, just if they want to like make the show better, they'll bring up a whole line of people. And the line of people will be struggling with a whole bunch of different maladies, anything from like physical ailments to emotional problems to like sin issues to you name it, right? Just a whole host of people that have a whole bunch of issues. And then the music will start playing in the background, and then like the particular televangelist that you'll be watching will stand up, and then they will begin to make an impact on people. Maximum force, minimum time, right? And like sometimes like they'll just go and they'll stand in front of this person and they'll just like touch the forehead like bam, Impact, big force, minimum time. And if it's a really good show, then the people will fall down, right? Doesn't get any more impactful than that, right? And we're just like, people are falling, like deliverance, healed, people just like falling down all over the stage. That's impact, right? Demons being cast out now. Emotional problems being solved now, right? Historical woundings being solved now, right? All the good things that we believe that Jesus wants to do in the kingdom happening in a very short period of time with a maximum force of power coming from whoever that televangelist powerful person is. Now, I don't know what you think about that. I know what I think about it. But here's what I think we can all agree on. That model is so attractive to us. Whether you're the one doing the ministry or the one being ministered to, we love that model. Because if you're the one doing the ministry to somebody else, here's what that means. If it's true, what it means is you don't have to spend a ton of time with the people that you're ministering to. There's no 3 years of labor on their behalf. No, let's do this quick and get it over with. And there's no mess, right? There's no messy life on life stuff. It's just clean. Get in, get out. Come on the stage, healed, and get on out of here and go home. That's about as clean as you're going to get relationally when it comes to ministry with people, right? There's no like long obedience in the same direction, discipleship with another person where they're going two steps forward and then one step back and you got to like journey with them through that. There's none of that. There's no hard questions to dig into. There's no historical trauma that we got to dig our hands into and work over. There's no trust that you have to build with the person over time to get more access into their lives. There's none of that. And that's all hard. And it takes time, right? If you're the one doing the ministry, wouldn't it be great? Bam, healed, delivered, healed, delivered, rescued, all the things. Great impact, maximum force, minimum time. We love that. And if you're the one getting ministered to, which of us doesn't want to be delivered from a sin habit that we've struggled with for years now? Who wouldn't come up and say, yeah, push me over in the Spirit. I'll receive deliverance now. No, we're all signing up for that. If it's true, all of us are in line waiting to receive that because that's what we want. Because we've got an impact fetish. We love maximum force. We love minimum time. Regarding impact, I just want to be clear. All of us this afternoon can have an impact. You ready? All of us. Here's what you do. Get in your car, get on the highway, and go as fast as you can. Just pedal to the metal, and then just jerk the wheel in any direction you want to jerk, and you're going to hit something. And that's going to be maximum force in minimum time. That's impact. Okay, don't do that. My point here is that not all impact is good. Right? Consider James and John, right? Wanting to rule sons of thunder, right? They want to bring all their thunder, all their force to bear on all the problems of the world. Here's the question. We got to ask the question if we could, right? Jesus is patient with them, but he could ask this question. He said, James and John, yeah, you don't like Caesar. Caesar's a tyrant. You don't like what he's doing. Do you think we ought to change one tyrant for two? Would the world be better if instead of oppressed and oppressor, if we just shifted that and now the oppressors became the oppressed and the oppressed became the oppressors? That's all you're going to do. James and John are the guys, remember, that when there's one town filled with Samaritans that said, Jesus, if you're going to Jerusalem, you can't stay here. We don't like those people. James and John said, let's call fire down from heaven and burn them all up now. James and John, VP and Secretary of State, is that good for anybody? No. Are they going to have an impact? You betcha they're going to have an impact. Is it going to be good? No, absolutely not. But that's what they see. They just want to get into the position of power to do all the forceful things that they can do in a minimum amount of time and make the world how they want it to be. And Jesus says, you have no idea what you're asking for. That's not what I am doing. That's not it. And this is where I'm referencing Andy Crouch again, because there's four things that he delivered to me in that podcast that have been so helpful. Here's the second thing. If force over time is what we love and long for, but Jesus says no to that. He said, here's the equation that we should be leaning into. It's also F. There's an F and a T, but the equation is different. It's F to the power of T. But F is not force. T is time. F now is what we're going to refer to as friendship. Friendship to the power of time is what we should be leaning into and what Jesus invites us into. When you see Jesus clearly, we will see that Jesus wants to invite us into friendship over the compounding of time. And Jesus wants us to invite other people, not up and be healed and be delivered and be saved. Get out of here and I never want to see you again. No, that's not it. He wants us to invite people into friendship over time, because that's how things in the kingdom of God actually shift and change. Okay, here's the third thing that Andy delivered to me that I can't believe that I never knew this before. I've taught through the book of Ruth so many times. I referred to it here, I think, just a matter of 3 weeks ago, and essentially told this same story I'm going to tell here real quick. But here's what Andy Crouch said. He said, in Hebrew, Ruth actually means friendship. I'd never heard that. I'd never read that. I don't know how. I'm embarrassed to say it. Always learning new things. He said, Ruth means friendship. She was a Moabite woman who at some point had a Moabite name, but then she received a Hebrew name, and her Hebrew name was friendship. Why? Well, because she was a friend. And Andy says this. He says that if you were to ask Jesus of the paradigmatic story of redemption in all the Bible, he would say Ruth, because Ruth was a friend over time, and it changed everything. Right, here's the story. I said this a couple weeks ago, but just by reminder. The book of Ruth is a crazy story of a woman, Naomi, who lost her husband and her sons in a foreign land, and she has nothing, and she's bitter. And she's ready to go back to Israel as an embittered woman, and she's going to go by herself. And Ruth says, no, mother-in-law, you will not go alone. I will go with you. Wherever you go, I go. Wherever you stay, I stay. I am choosing to be your friend. Our lives, your life is a train wreck, but the only thing that makes sense to me right now is to be your friend over time, and then let's just see what happens. And Naomi says, no, Ruth, that's silly. Go home. And Ruth says, no, I'm not going home. I'm going to be your friend over the compounding interest of time. And then the book of Ruth, the whole story then begins to play out. What looks like it's a hopeless end to Naomi and both of them over the period of years of friendship. Years of friendship. Not be delivered, be rescued, but be healed. Not get out of here. No, over the course of years, that friendship becomes the gateway to incredible blessing that God will pour out on both of their lives and to the world at large. Incredible. Right? Deuteronomy 7. Again, I just want to give credit here. Like Andy Crouch, this is like the fourth thing, right? The two math equations, Ruth, her name is friend, and then this, right? Deuteronomy 7. God's blessing goes to 1,000 generations. Meaning that what God blesses, there is a power that has the ability to just keep moving through time in people through stories. They're like in the beginning, God created, right? And he made trees. And there's still trees here because the power of the tree just keeps going from one generation to the other. God's blessing is like that. It just keeps moving forward to 1,000 generations. In the book of Ruth, we have an obscure story of very obscure, seemingly nobody women in a nowhere place. Bethlehem was nowhere back then, actually had negative connotations. You'll hear that in the podcast, right? But in this obscure place with nobody women in a nowhere place, here's what God did, because friendship happened over time, right? It goes from Ruth and Boaz, right? You know that they get married, and then generation, remember the blessing of God is generational, generation, King David. Oh, that's a blessing right there. That's the golden age of Israel. We're on a mountain peak here, and then into Solomon. The blessing continues for a while. And then generation, like just keep moving through the generations, and then Jesus comes in this line. Is that a blessing to the world? You betcha. Right? And then from Jesus, then we'll go into like the disciples and Paul and the early church and generation. Jay, Brian, Kemp, Matt, like the blessings of God. They play out in power over periods of time. But the way that the blessings of God get introduced into the world is with friendship over time, not necessarily with impact. Force, time, clean and easy, get out. Even though that's what we want, James and John, that's not how the power of God gets unleashed. Yeah, James and John, they see not Jesus, they're seeing impact. Maximum force, minimal time, crush the Romans now. Yeah, so we can trade one tyrant for two. No thanks. Jesus says, no, we're not going to bring maximum force in a minimum time to crush the Romans. What we're actually going to do is we're going to become friends with the world. And in the world, are Romans a part of the world? You betcha. And so we're going to be friends with them. Well, how do we know? Well, because Jesus said to all the Hebrews that he would talk to, he would say, love your enemies. If you're going to be my disciple, love your enemies. Who's number one enemy? Public enemy number one, Israelites, Rome. Love them. Pray for those who are persecuting you, Jesus says. He says, hey, if somebody asks you to go 1 mile, go with them another. And that was an explicit reference to Roman soldiers who could conscript any person that they were dominating in the Roman Empire, and they could make you carry their military baggage for 1 mile, and then you were free. Jesus says, hey, if you're going to follow me, let's go too. You go the first one because Rome makes you, but we're going to go the second because we follow Jesus, and we want to be friends over time, because that's how the blessing of God gets introduced, and it's a powerful overtime blessing. It's going to take some time, but it's powerful over time. But James and John can't see that yet. We're in Matthew 20. We're pretty far towards the end of the gospel, but they're not seeing that yet. James and John, they want to have an impact on their careers, right? They want to go from fisherman to VP, Secretary of State, maximum force, minimal time. Let's climb the ladder and let's just rule this thing. But what Jesus would rather do is not have an impact on their careers. He'd rather have an influence on their hearts. Look at verse 25, back to the request of the mother, James and John, right? After this, the disciples all get mad because they wanted the same position. And then Jesus calls them, verse 25, and said to them, he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your bondservant. Even as the Son of Man, the great King, Son of Man, came not to be served, but to serve. Guys, can't you see me? I haven't come to be a tyrant over the world. I'm here to serve. Have you not seen anything that I've done? But the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to serve so far that he would give his life as a ransom for many. Wow. Jesus isn't looking to make you a powerful ruler, James and John. He is looking to make you a humble lover of people, but they can't see it because they can't see him yet. They think they do, but they don't. James and John, they want to be impactful leaders. Jesus wants them to be serving disciples. They can't see it yet. James and John, they wanted Jesus to see them in all their strength and sons of thunder power. Jesus, see me and fulfill our request. What Jesus wants is for James and John to see him and to follow in his call. But they're not able to yet because they can't see it. James and John, their mom, and all of the crowds, all of them, they want to get right to impact. Start changing things now. And they've got a way that they think that's going to happen. And they've got no time for losers. No time to waste here with things that don't really matter. And in the story of the two blind men, I love this. Verse 30, the blind men say, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David, hear us, see us." Verse 31, the crowd, meaning everyone, rebuked them, telling them to be silent. "Shut up, blind guys. You're not what he's here for. You're a waste of time. You don't matter. Shh. We've got an impact to make." And for the crowd, in their desire to silence the blind, they reveal that they are blind to Jesus. They don't see him. Similarly, they would remember how they, Pastor Coach Kemp talked about last week, how the crowds and the disciples would resist the kids. "No, we don't have time for that. We don't have time for friendship with kids. We got an impact to make." But in resisting the kids, they reveal that they're not trusting Jesus as children. In seeking positions, they're clearly revealing that they're not honoring Jesus in his position. Verse 31. The crowd, but they, right? The crowd's rebuking them, telling them to be silent. But they, the two blind men, cried out all the more. Love it. They wouldn't stop. "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." And stopping, taking his time, Jesus called to them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus has the time to make some friends with two blind men that nobody else sees, just him. And then what happens is these two blind men become disciples. Verse 34, "And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes, and immediately they recovered their sight and followed him." Begs the question, are James and John really following Jesus at this point? I don't know. They're with him. They're going where he goes. But are they following him as disciples? Thinking that they see him? I don't think so yet. But these two blind men cry out to Jesus. Jesus restores their sight. They see him. Are they his disciples? Well, yeah, it says right here that they followed him. James, John, mom, crowds, their desire for now impact is blinding them from the power of God that wants to bless down to 1,000 generations. But that power comes through friendship over time. It comes through service over time. It comes through hesed, loving kindness over long periods of time. You want to see Jesus? That's who he is. You want to follow him? That's what he calls us to do. And there's power there. Such power. Band, come on back up. We're going to sing a couple more songs. I do think that we need to have a heart. What do you call it when they take out one organ and give you another one? Transplant? Yeah. Our hearts that long for impact, I think we just need to have them removed and have a new heart of flesh put in its place. Rejecting maximum force over minimum time in the ease and the comfort that that provides. Rejecting that for the beautiful, magical, unfolding heart of God that plays out in the world. In his friendship with us over time, in his call for us to love well over time. So the power of God might be made clear. The compounding kingdom of Jesus might grow, starting with the mustard seed and then becoming the tallest and biggest plant in the whole garden. So I want to encourage you, if you're not on our email list, just sign up. Stacy, you might get overwhelmed. I'm sorry. There's probably some new folks that are not on the email list, but I just want you guys to hear this podcast. I think we're going to hit it again. We're going to talk about it because I just think it's something, again, as Americans and as modern Christians, I think we just struggle with this. But it's such a beautiful invitation that he calls us to. Let's pray and then we'll sing. Father in heaven, thank you. Thanks for your friendship. Thank you that you Ruth us so well. Truth be told, all of us, like Naomi, we're bitter for varying reasons. We're cranky and angry and upset. Our hearts are unsettled. We're broken and we're fragmented. Father, what you do is you friend us over time. And there's such power there. So first and foremost, we just want to receive your friendship, given and bestowed upon us because of Jesus and his broken body and shed blood. Greater love, greater friendship has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. We just want to receive your constant and abiding friendship. That's the only way that we can actually see you. And then, Father, from there, I pray that your Spirit would fill us with your 1,000-generation blessing power to follow you in your way and to friend with each other and those who are far from you over time. So that new stories might be written. So that more people might be able to find their place in this beautiful thing that you're doing. And now, God, because of your great friendship and because of how awesome you are, we're just going to sing to you. Because it's about the only thing that makes sense when we truly see you for who you are. Thank you for loving us so well. It's in the name of Jesus, our friend, that we pray. Amen.